ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Chant together text 22, Canto 9, chapter 10. And we'll read the previous verse that has no purport.
Ramastamaha purushara parishayanna. Kanta samaksham asata pradita shavat. Svavate Jakta Trapasya Padam Adya Jugupsitasya Yachami Kala Ivakar Tur Alangya Viryaha Ramastamaha purushara parishayanna Kanta samaksham asata parita svavate Chakta trapasya padam adya jugupsitasya Yachami kala ivakar tur alangya viryaha.
So I'm going to go back and read 21 and then 22 in purport. Text 21. Thereafter, when Ravana, the king of the Rakshasas, observed that his soldiers had been lost, he was extremely angry. Thus he mounted his airplane, which was decorated with flowers, and proceeded toward Lord Ramachandra, who sat on the effulgent chariot brought by Matali. Matali, the chariot driver of Indra. Then Ravana struck Lord Ramachandra with sharp arrows. That was 21. Here's 22. Lord Ramachandra said to Ravana, pretty heavy, "You are the most abominable of the man-eaters. Indeed, you are like their stool." Pretty heavy. "You resemble a dog. For a dog steals eatables from the kitchen in the absence of the householder. In my absence, you kidnap my wife Sita Devi. Therefore, as Yamaraj punishes sinful men, I shall also punish you. You are most abominable, sinful, and shameless. Today, therefore, I, whose attempt never fails, shall punish you." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Nacha daivat param balam. No one can surpass the strength of the transcendence, with a capital T. Ravana was so sinful and shameless that he did not know what the result would be of kidnapping Mother Sita, the pleasure potency of Lord Ramachandra. This is the disqualification of the Rakshasas. Asatyam apratishtam te jagad ahur anishwaram. The Rakshasas are unaware that the Supreme Lord is the ruler of the creation. They think that everything has come about by chance or accident, and that there is no ruler, king, or controller. Therefore, the Rakshasas act independently as they like, going even so far as to kidnap the goddess of fortune. This policy of Ravana is extremely dangerous for the materialist, semicolon. Indeed, it brings ruin to the materialistic civilization. Nonetheless, because atheists are rakshasas, they dare to do things that are most abominable, and thus they are punished without fail. Religion consists of the orders of the Supreme Lord, and one who carries out these orders is religious. One who fails to carry out the Lord's orders is irreligious, and he is to be punished. We have a little competition with the lawnmower. Yeah, not a big yard back there. So, a few things. Na cha daivat param balam. I did a little research, and this is not so often referenced, but in a few places Prabhupada, in purports and in conversations, he references this. Na cha daivat param balam. So, param balam. Daivat param balam. The daivat, or transcendence, mentioned here. The super soul. The supreme of the five factors of action. There, one of them is daiva. And nothing can surpass the strength, bala, of daiva. So one of the references, where Prabhupada writes this also is in the eighth canto of the Bhagavatam, and the reference there is that there's five factors of action, and up amongst the five factors of action, the strongest is daiva. So a little exercise in Bhagavad Gita chapter 18, the five factors of action. You need five things, and without which any one of them being absent, then there's no action. Factors of action, karma. Material activity. You need a place where the activity is performed. Adishtanam is the Sanskrit place. You need the performer, karta, the worker. This is just a little detour, and we'll come back again to karta, or the doer, the performer. Earlier in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, don't consider yourself to be the doer. Karta aham iti manyate. Karta aham iti manyate. The persons who are under the influence of false ego or in maya, they think of themselves as the doer. So Krishna's advice is, don't think like that. Rather, everything is carried out by prakriti. And prakriti is another element of creation. The next in the list here is the instruments of action. Karanam. So the instrument, sarva karana karanam. So daiva is the sarva karana karanam. And then there's the karanam, the cause of action, or the instruments of action. The instruments of, so the karta, or the performer or the worker, cannot perform work without prakriti. I mean, it's pretty obvious. Supposing you're a spirit soul and there's no prakriti, how can you do anything? And then if you have prakriti, then you can be the karta, but you can't be the karta without some endeavor. Just like here we are, spirit souls in Prakriti, and we're sitting. And if we wanted to get up and walk across the floor, there's some endeavor that's required for action. Endeavor is required. Cheshta is the Sanskrit term. So in one sense, we're the doer in the sense that we're making some endeavor, but there's certainly a possibility that we don't make some endeavor, or we endeavor for this instead of that, and that determines action. We're making a free will choice of what we will endeavor for. Now, there's no guarantee it's going to happen that you can get up and walk across the floor. The power of locomotion could be taken away, and then you can't get up and walk across the floor. That's one of the four factors. The senses or the instruments of action are karanam. So we'll go through them again. A place, the worker, the instruments of action, some endeavor, and then ultimately daiva. In Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada translates that as supersoul, because supersoul oversees Prakriti, Maya Jakshina Prakriti. And Prakriti makes up, when it breaks down, makes up the instruments or the senses, the instruments of action. Prakriti doesn't make up spirit souls, they're of a different category, but both Prakriti and the living entity are Krishnas. We know this from chapter 7, Bhagavad Gita. And then everything in this world is made up of a combination of those two overseen by Supersoul, Daiva. So, of the now back to this purport, the message that Prabhupada is delivering in the purport is, of the five factors of action, the most powerful, unsurpassably powerful, is Daiva. So, Ravana wants to harm Daiva. And Daiva says to Ravana, you're finished. And his word is infallible. When the Supreme Lord says something, it's infallible because he is the source of everything. He is all powerful, including the power of Ravana. So how can the power of Ravana overcome the power of the source of all power? Unless the source of all power performs a pastime where he permits that to happen, like he does with his devotees. He places himself subordinate to his devotees, and then the devotee surpasses the Lord. We discussed this the other day. That's one of Krishna's qualities. He arranges things for his devotees in such a way the devotees surpass him, the devotees control him. They control him by love, not by something else. But he gives them the strength to do that, the capacity to do that. He submits himself to them, depending upon the relationship. And that's consistent with the section that we're reading. Lord Ramachandra submitted himself completely to the words of his father, because his father had such filial affection. Nice discussion. But when there's the Ravanas of this world, or the atheists of this world, and now we're making reference to chapter 16, Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada does in the purport, the demoniac persons, the Rakshasa persons are demoniac or atheists, demons. Simple. Prabhupada said the definition is very simple. Just ask somebody, do you believe in God? Okay. And therefore that's a devotee. And someone that says, I don't believe in God, therefore that's a demon. Very simple. So Ravana is in that second category because Anishwaram, referencing Bhagavad Gita 16.8, Anishwaram, the demoniac mentality, Ravana is in that category, demoniac mentality, have a view of the world, and there's no Ishvara, there's no controller. I'm not accountable to anybody. Anishwaram. And apratishta. Apratishta. You know the meaning of pratishta. It's like the installation of the deity is pran pratishta, establishing the deity by inviting the Lord to enter the form of the deity and receive worship. Pran pratishta. Or in Bhagavad Gita chapter 14, Krishna uses that word pratishta. Brahmanohi pratishta aham. I am the pratishta, or the foundation, the basis of Brahman. Brahman is resting on me. So that's the pratishta. And the demoniac, chapter 16, apratishta. There's no basis or foundation. That's their worldview. There's no controller. Anishwaram. There's no basis and foundation. Apratishtam. And asatyam. The world is unreal. It's phantasmagoria. It's meaningless. So you can do what you like. Whether the person is there are different classic categories of such people. Mechanistic scientists are such people. There's no controller. There's no foundation. It's all unreal. It's all by chance. Oh, what is it? It's just chance. Or an existentialist. Or an impersonalist. Or, you know, different, you know, categories, and then mixtures of those categories. But Ravana is in the category of a Rakshasa, so he's being called different names, name calling. He's identifying where he's at. You're like the stool of man-eaters. You're a man-eater. You're like the stool of man-eaters. Because you do what animals do, like dogs do. They come and steal edibles when the master is away. So similarly, you've stolen Sita when I was away. You're a dog. You're the stool of a Rakshasa. You're abominable, sinful, shameless. In the verse, Jugupsitasya. Abominable. Tyakta trapasya. Shameless. And you're fit for punishment because of those reasons. Sinful. Shameless. Abominable. And so the right way to address you is to punish you. As Yamaraj punishes, I who am infallible, I'm going to personally punish you in an appropriate manner. And my position, the last word here, is alangya virya. Alanga virya means strength. Alanga virya, infallible strength. I, whose potency is infallible, am going to punish you. Of course, kshatriyas, we know from the Bhagavatam, they say heavy-duty things back and forth and back and forth. But when the Supreme Personality of Godhead says such things, he's infallible. And we know ahead of time what the outcome is going to be when he says he's going to punish. He's going to punish. And of course, Ravana is going to, because he's a demon who believes apratishta, there's no foundation, anishvara, there's no controller, asatyam, everything is illusion, unreal, I'm going to be victorious. You're just a puny man. And I'm blessed by the devas with various powers and so forth and so on. So who are you? Now, he has practical evidence, just even from the previous section that Ishwar read yesterday, powerful soldiers, one after the next, after the next, after the next, were destroyed. His top generals, Kumbhakarna, etc., destroyed. But, so, part of the nature of someone who is infested with offensiveness, not just sinful, but offensive to the Supreme. Even when the display of divinity is shown to them, they can't see it. They can't see it. One of my favorites is, what's his name? The king that came so many times to try to kill Krishna in Mathura. Jarasandha. What a determined fellow he was. He saw again and 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 again, and still he couldn't see it. His determination to defeat Krishna was overwhelming. He was blind. So part of the complication of someone that's in this category is even when they see the personality of God, they cannot see. When they see something spiritual, they cannot see. They see it some other way. So whether it's a scholar that reads the Bhagavatam and says mythology or whatever the category one is coming from, it can't, that which is spiritual, they cannot see it. And so our challenge as Hare Krishna devotees is to bring people on the path of opening their eyes so they can see. Chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha, or be the instrument of one who has that capacity through repeating the message of transcendence, by distributing books, by giving the holy name, by giving Krishna prasadam, by relieving one of that burden of sinful contamination a little bit, so that hopefully one day their eyes can open and they can say, oh, now I can see. Or there are some people that are actually searching for transcendence, although they don't know what it is. Reality with a capital R, although they don't know what it is. Truth with a capital T. And those are wonderful people, and we meet those wonderful people. That's joyful. It's also joyful to be an instrument of Krishna to give a relief to the conditioned soul of the burden of their misconceptions and sinful reactions and so forth. It's a different kind of blissful. But it's being an instrument of the Supreme Lord. That's the blissfulness, because we're not meant to be the enjoyer. Krishna is the enjoyer. He's meant to be the enjoyer, and he is the enjoyer. And that's our life and devotion, is to invest ourselves in Krishna's enjoyment. That's devotional service. Okay, so any discussion?
Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, in your preparation for the Ayodhya Yatra, the past tense of Lord Ramachandra, I mean, your realizations on this, they are, it's not like the past tense of Lord Krishna. When we hear the past tense of Lord Krishna, you know, Krishna is mostly on the top of everything.
Krishna is mostly what?
He's always like in the top of everything.
He's on top of everything?
Yeah, he shows being the controller. He never was, very rarely Krishna appears to be overwhelmed by something. And in Lord Ramachandra's, he shows a lot of human frailties like sadness, depression, even reversals like that, you know, during a whole year he couldn't get to Sita, Mother Sita. So, the purpose of Lord Ramachandra's showing, you know, these pastimes of human frailties like that, if I may say, what have you encounter, you know, in your studies and preparation, the explanation for that?
Well, your question is similar to a question asked the other day by Giridhari. What's the special attraction of the human-like aspects of Lord Ramachandra, or Krishna for that matter? So it's, you're asking it in a different way, but it's a similar question. I'll give the same answer in a different way. He's not exhibiting the fullness of his Aishwarya, his opulence. And that makes his pastimes in certain ways relatable or attractive. Not that he's one of us or like one of us, but relatable. Instead of, you know, Lord Shingadev comes out of a pillar and does what he does. And so forth. So the Aishwarya feature is diminished by his human-likeness. And that's attractive. It makes, you know, the mind can relate in a more intimate way. And then, you know, there's a transcendental side to the whole thing, the separation for 1 year that has, you know, for his transcendental sake, love and separation, and Sita also, or relatable in the sense of there's tribulation that seems like it's there's the obstacles cannot be overcome. What to do. Life has its, there are many things in life that are just outside of our ability to do anything about. We can make some endeavor, but it's just, you know, like the simple example that Prabhupada gives of the sparrow trying to dry up the ocean to get her eggs back. So he's taking the position like a human being that needs to depend on, you know, Daiva, although he's Daiva, to recover. So it's a lesson to teach us. And therefore it's relatable, and there's a certain intimacy that, let's say, you know, in Vaikuntha, it's not there. It's another mood. All in reverence. So there's a closeness, a relatability, a lesson imparting feature in Ram's pastimes. It make, you know, so it, the sense of identifying with the hero. We don't identify with Lord Nrisimhadev or or Vamana that's going to, in a second step, cover the entire universe, or Matsya, or Kurma, or, you know, the other Leela avatars. It's very human-like. His pastimes are human-like and therefore relatable, and it brings a kind of intimacy. In contrast to majesty. It's not in Goloka yet, but so that's similar to the answer I expressed the other day when Giridhari was asking. He's teaching the ideal king. That's kind of like the big backdrop of Ramchandra's pastime, the ideal king, Ram Raja. So ideal kings may also undergo reversals. And how do they address the reversals? And then, you know, the love of Lakshmana. And how does a loving friend support another friend when that friend in human life is undergoing great tribulation? What does he do? Again and again and again, Lakshmana was investing, just like we were hearing at our seminar, you know, courage and hope and confidence, and let's work together to, you know, let's find Sita. You're a hero. Don't succumb to this. Let's keep searching for Sita. I'm here to support you. So it's human-like. Lakshmana, he, from childhood, was always with Ram, and always the servant of Ram, and he looked to him that way. He could not be separate from Ram. So Ram's going through an ordeal, some difficulty. Now, how does somebody in that position interact with? So it's lesson imparting for a great king and persons that are in association with a great personality. What do you do? And so on. Ekapatni Vrata, the ideal king, and so on. Now, the sages of the Dandak forest, Ram said, you know, wait till next time I come, and I'll accept you that way. So, Krishna is expanding the Madhurya Pija even further. But it's the expansion of the Madhurya feature, the accessibility of not overwhelming opulence. And so there's lessons within that because of that. Not appearing the infallible, although he's stating here, I'm infallible. Yes.
Maharaj, here we are hearing that Ravana, he was taking strength from so many different things. Like he was saying that the demigods have given me these different strengths.
He was saying what? Speak slowly.
The demigods, they have given him different strengths to fight. So I was thinking that there are circumstances when it seems like we take strength from things.
We take strength from where?
From other sources.
Other sources.
Yes. Like I can take...
Is that okay or not okay? Taking strength from other sources.
Like education or other sources. But I was thinking that how can we deepen our shelter taking of Krishna rather than looking for other sources as our strength?
Well, I'm not sure I've understood your question, but supposing that our primary source of shelter, just to, you know, close your eyes and imagine, primary source of shelter is Krishna, and Krishna is very kind. So Krishna gives himself or empowers someone as his resource, his shelter, through others. And then others are to be seen in that way, the kindness of Krishna. And so it's not taking shelter of other than Krishna if one sees great personalities, whoever they may be, other devotees or even for that matter demigods. No, we don't worship the demigods or call the name of the demigods thinking they're equal to or independent from. But just for example, two examples. One is the gopis worshipping Katyayani, and in Ramachandra's pastimes, you know, we just read a little bit earlier, his sitting by the shore of the ocean requesting assistance from the ocean personified, although it's his devotee. Or although it's not in Valmiki Ramayana, it's in Ramcharita Manas that Ram, upon returning to India after killing Ravana, he worshipped Lord Shiva. So some people misunderstand that, but what was he doing? He was showing his human likeness, where because he had killed a Brahmana, although Ravana was wicked, he killed a Brahmana. And so he was atoning for his having killed the Brahmana by worshipping Lord Shiva. But the deeper sense was, according to our acharyas, he was showing how much regard he has for his devotee. He was Krishna, or Ramchandra, honors his devotee. And Lord Shiva is his devotee, the best of his devotees. So he's honoring him, appearing as if he's subordinate. So that's Lord Ramachandra. Is it possible for a devotee to honor Lord Shiva or demigods? Certainly. Look at the whole of Brahma Samhita. Many of the verses of the prayers, it's honoring this one, that one, the other one, and they're all under the jurisdiction of Govinda. And it explains how. We're honoring them for that empowerment that they have under the authority of Govinda. Then it's not worshipping them, it's honoring them. Does that address your question? I'm not sure I got your question right.
Yes. There's also another part of the question, if I may ask.
Speak slowly.
Yes. So, Maharaj, I was particularly thinking about like other resources for help, like education or...
We just had this education experience. And is that not taking shelter of Krishna?
When we see it that it's something that Krishna has given us, then it's taking shelter. But sometimes I feel like there is a lot of pride that, oh, I have this ability to do like that, but not being able to see it connected to Krishna.
Well, see the connection to Krishna. That's the solution. Let's take two examples. You do deity worship. And to do deity worship, did you get some education and training how to do the deity worship properly? No, it's easy to see the connection between the training and education that you received how to worship the deity properly, because the deity is Krishna. So no problem there, right? So now let's go to what we just did this past holiday. there's training and education how to do service to Krishna, how to serve the devotees. And maybe we'll have the opportunity to serve others that who aren't, they're parts and parcels of Krishna, but not presently in the mood of being Krishna's devotee. And we may do that. Now is that, if you get some training and education how to do that, is that apart from service to Krishna? Then you can take, so, deity worship, counseling devotees, and just keep going. And, you know, the circle may go out and out, but our lives are meant for the service of Krishna. And there are so many ways that we can be in service to Krishna. It's a false dilemma to see something separate from Krishna. I mean, it came right at the very beginning of our discussion, material, spiritual. And one response to the material, spiritual is, not really. Everything in relation to Krishna is spiritual. Now, it's certainly appropriate to make a distinction between that which is conscious and not conscious, or that which is eternal and that which is temporary, and the configurations of matter are temporary, therefore family is material. Now how do you make the temporary spiritual? By service to Krishna. Otherwise you wouldn't do it. You just wouldn't do it. What about eating? What about bathing? What about anything in relation to Krishna? So how do I conduct my life in marriage properly? How do I stay clean properly? How do I do anything properly? Get some education and training. So the operative principle is anukulyena, for the pleasure of Krishna. I accept that. I accept things on that basis. And whatever, I don't do things and I do things on that, I follow on that basis. And that way the intention behind the activity becomes properly aligned with the activity for the pleasure of Krishna intention. And then training and education for the pleasure of Krishna is just fine, wherever it may come from. Your question was stated differently twice by Anasuya, and she was struggling with that. Perhaps she's still struggling with that. You know, if all good qualities come from devotional service, then why do we need to get anything other than just focus on become a pure devotee, and then all good qualities will come? Why do we need education and training to help us develop proper qualities? It's not separate. It's part of the spirit of one who wants to get to that position. They're eager for that which will help me get to that position because of the right intention. Then it has its place. And if the intention isn't right, then the training and education stays on the material platform. That's the Bhagavatam's message over and over. Whatever, using Prabhupada's term, high-grade activity, if it doesn't result in the focused desire to please Krishna, it's useless. So don't think that way. Don't, you know, positively think the training and education, I'm interested in that which is going to help bring me closer to pleasing Krishna, because I have a desire to please Krishna, and something will help me enhance the desire to please Krishna, both the intention side and the practical application side. Then it's spiritual. It's in Krishna's service, both. And I want that association that will help me to either of those or both of those. Yes.
I don't know if I can word this question properly. Jarampa Swami, you know the you were referencing that little about that Prabhupada had used in the purport, that the view of the atheist or the view of the mechanistic scientist is that you know, there isn't a controller and that everything's impermanent and that I guess even material nature is illusory. So I guess I was I mean, from the philosophical point of view, I understand that that would be the viewpoint.
You understand there was a bang when you said, there was a, you understand?
You know, from the philosophical point of view, that that is, you know, making that distinction between the materialist and the spiritualist. But then on the other hand, you know, when there's the description of Ravana being, not even having seen Sita, but being determined to obtain her because of a description of her attractiveness or, you know, his sense of himself as being invincible. It seems that there's a kind of belief that everything is permanent and graspable.
And he felt secure in the boons that he received from Lord Shiva and Brahma. So there's some superior. In addition. But Anishwara, you know, come on, Ravana. 2 + 2 = what? However, the deluding potency acts on persons who are fundamentally inimical. It's something like impersonalist. Prabhupada's description of an impersonalist is they may use something to get what they want, but once they use that something to get what they want, they throw the something away. The ladder, and then to climb through the height, and then you throw the ladder away. Or you engage in deity worship to get to the position of Brahman, you throw the deity away. You take shelter of a guru to get teachings, and then you throw the guru away. It's just, like, very inconsiderate. And, it's acknowledging my dependence on something. But it's denial of the dependence because my goal is to be independent. It's not reasonable. It's highly unreasonable. And yet, you know, one can be indomitably determined, as was Ravana, as was Jarasandha. You know, a really good demon is indomitable in their determination, in the atheistic spirit. Even if they're accepting something that shows there's something above them, to say there's nothing above them. It's delusion. But you know, they can't take the position like the, you know, without the details in Ramayana, the advice given to Ravana by multiple people, even Kumbhakarna, even his father-in-law, or grandfather, or somebody, was advising Ravana, you know, just give back Sita and it's over. Give back Sita and it's over. No, I can't. Vibhishan, no, you get out of here. I'll kill, if you weren't my brother, I'd kill you. Get out of here. He, you know, I'm indomitable. And then people surrounding him saying, you're indomitable. And, you know, you don't have to do it. We'll do it for you. We're indomitable too. Bring it on. We'll... Foolish, shameless. So, that's a spirit that drives an atheist. You know, different degrees of that spirit that drive the atheist. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.